Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello and happy Friday. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on October 24th. Coming up today, the MP for Ashford weighs in on the troubles at Kent County Council. A Street Fighter-style game is in the works featuring famous figures from Medway, and we'll take a look at this weekend's Gillingham fixture. But first, taking a look at our top story today. An anonymous tip-off has uncovered a Folkestone benefits cheat who falsely claimed £23,000 in universal credit and a council tax reduction. Diana Lucas has appeared in court after admitting making false statements to the Department for Work and Pensions. Lucy has some more details for the Kent Online podcast. First up, Luce, what do we know about the offences?
Well, we heard the outline of the case against Lucas when she appeared in Folkestone Magistrates Court on Monday. We know that after winning £20,000 on the government-backed premium bond scheme, she sold her home and spent a year living abroad in India. Despite still having a sum of cash in the bank when she returned to the UK, she applied for universal credit and a reduction in her council tax bill. Between 2021 and 2024, Lucas received more than £23,000.
How was she able to get away with it for so long?
Lucas made a claim for universal credit in January 2021, saying she was unemployed, had no income and was single, before making a similar claim for council tax reduction in May of the same year. However, after an anonymous tip-off to the authorities, her bank accounts were investigated and it was discovered she had two accounts. Her defence team said she was keeping the £20,000 she'd won on the premium bonds aside to help support her family. Magistrates also heard Lucas had health issues, including severe arthritis and a disc disorder in her back, and was waiting for operations to her foot and knee.
And how was she eventually sentenced?
Well, her defence team argued that it was out of character for Lucas and she's very unlikely to come to court again. She has paid the council tax back, but there's apparently a lot outstanding in terms of the universal credit. Magistrates said although the offences did pass the custody threshold, she would not be sent to prison. The 56-year-old who lives in Pavilion Court in Marine Terrace was given a 30-week suspended sentence. She must repay the rest of what she owes in full within 28 days.
Thanks, Lucy. You can read more about this story on the homepage of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
An update now on a story we've mentioned several times on the podcast this week. A man's been remanded in custody after appearing in court following reports of a sex attack on a teenager on Tunbridge Wells Common. A girl is said to have been assaulted by a stranger while walking home last Saturday night. 46-year-old Rocco Manafra from Judd Road in Tunbridge was arrested on Monday and has now been charged with various offences, including making threats to kill. He's due at Maidstone Crown Court on November 21st. Two men have been sent to prison for stealing at least 8 Ford Fiestas across Kent in the space of 5 months. They were able to bypass security systems by using an onboard diagnostics tool and targeted vehicles around Tunbridge Wells, Gravesend and Ramsgate. The pair, who are 36 and 24, have been locked up for a combined total of more than 3 years. Now, the MP for Ashford says the chaos we've seen at Kent County Council shows Reform UK wouldn't be able to run the national government. The authority's leader, Lyndon Kemp-Caron's, been facing calls to resign this week after a leaked video showed her swearing at her own councillors who questioned her plans for local government reorganisation. Ashford MP Sojan Joseph has been on this week's episode of the Kent Politics Podcast, chatting to local democracy reporters Dan Essen and Simon Finlay.
You probably saw the video probably around the same time as the rest of us on Saturday afternoon. What was your reaction when you saw it?
Well, it's an absolute shambles. I was shocked to see that video. I would not want my leader to talk to me like that. I've been a councillor. As a councillor, you take the views of your the local members, the local public. Mm. So the councillors were trying to say, I mean, especially that meeting was discussing such an important meeting about local government reorganisation. Mm. And this is such an important matter for Kent. So they need to work with the district councils. But what we've seen is we know that they submitted their recommendation for a one unitary authority for Cork Kent. which seems to be the councillors are not happy with, and not a single Kent resident will be happy with, because we have seen KCC as such a massive organisation not able to deliver for the Kent people. So that's why the local government reorganisation is such an important matter. I was shocked to see that video that there was no democracy in their party and there's no discussion.
Well, having said that, gentlemen, the County Council's network have actually agreed with Lyndon Kemp-Caron's stance that only a single unitary authority in a two-tier system going forward is the one that will actually deliver the government the savings your government wants.
Well, I don't agree with that. The idea of one single large unitary is too big. Kent is geographically, Kent is quite diverse. The needs of people in Margate is different to the needs of people in Tunbridge Wells. Mm. The needs of people in Ashford is different to people in Canterbury. So I think it would be a disaster if you're going to have a large unitary authority. Mm. I mean, my background in health, working in mental health, I know that we have many deprived areas in Kent. Not every part of the Kent is the wealthy area. So we need to have two or three unitary authorities where we can deliver for the people.
There are some people who would argue that the content of that video, while it was quite ill-tempered, isn't really all that damning. Lyndon Kemp-Caron is leading a group of people who are not experienced councillors, many of whom have not been elected before, with the attention of the entire country, basically on account, because of its political balance, on a county council, which pretty much never happens. And politics attracts basically quite difficult and tempestuous personalities, and she's got to keep them all in line. Some, you know, some people say, who hasn't sat in a meeting and been that frustrated? Who in her position would not be very annoyed? I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, you can see this as a short tempered, but you're all public servants. You're talking to councillors who are equal to you. You're not dictating things to the councillor. The councillors are trying to bring the issues that matter to the local area. They represent the people. So I think it was a desperation to show that we can do it, but it's not a way of doing it. It's not a democratic way of doing this. I agree your observation. There's a lack of experience in running local governments. If you can't run a council, how are you going to run the country? That's the bigger question we should be asking.
You can hear that full interview on the politics page of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Kent Police is calling for a hotel in Sheerness to lose its licence after a string of reports of crime and disorder. Officers say after new owners took over the Royal Hotel, suspected drugs have been found in the toilets and staff have failed to report serious assaults. It's set to be discussed by Swale Council in December. A former military site in Folkestone that's being used to house asylum seekers is set to be emptied by the end of the year. Napier Barracks was turned into accommodation for refugees by the previous Conservative government in 2020. The Home Office is making plans to hand it back over to the Ministry of Defence, who will then pass it over to developers so it can be turned into housing. Residents in part of Medway say a pharmacy that closed in the summer is sitting there like a ghost, preventing new ones from opening. Jutes in the Raynham shopping precinct shut in August, but it's still showing up on local needs assessments, so the area's been considered well served. Our local Democracy reporters Robert Boddy and Ollie Leader have been chatting to people in the town.
These people that took over from Boots are lying. So whichever one it was, it's been a nightmare from the beginning, you know. So people like us, especially people that don't drive, are restricted, you know. And if you've got an ailment or something like that, you've got to try and rely on deliveries and things like that. And you rely on people, other people, which you shouldn't have to do that, not when you've got a local chemist.
We had three here and now we haven't got any. But I mean, as you can look around, there's so many older people here. How do they ever get their prescriptions? How do they get anything out of a pharmacy?
So when I first arrived here, we moved in about 3 years ago. There was three pharmacies here. Mm-hmm. Now there's half of one. Mm. I'm not going to smack talk the company itself. Mm. There's staff there that are probably worried about their jobs, and but it's been up and down now for a long time, and it's not good for them. It's not good for the community.
Oh, I think there's a big problem, especially from, you know, I mean, okay, I'm capable of getting from A to B, but other people are not, and it's our age group really that's suffering through not having a pharmacy in Raynham.
It's just rubbish, isn't it? They've been shut for quite a while, only because they didn't have a pharmacist there. But if you look in there, there's hardly anything on the shelves anyway. So they obviously either haven't paid the pharmacist or the company is just going down the pan, basically.
People paid a lot more money than me to make those decisions. Being somebody that lives in the local community, I would say we definitely need at least one permanent pharmacy in this area, in the centre of Raynham. Whether three was too much, I don't know, but it certainly cut down queues. But I do think we definitely need one permanent pharmacy in this area.
A council committee has agreed to write to the government to try and address the issue.
Kent Online News.
A care home in Sittingbourne has been placed in special measures after being rated inadequate following an inspection. Pine Lodge provides care to 59 people, including those who live with dementia. Inspectors found four breaches of regulation, including issues with staffing. Bosses say they're working with the CQC to address the issues. Plans to build a solar farm the size of 250 football pitches in a village near Ashford have been approved by the government. Evolution Power will be installing panels at Stone Street Green in Aldington, with the site capable of generating enough renewable electricity for 48,000 homes a year. Permission's been given by the Planning Inspectorate. People living nearby say it's a sad day for the village, as they think it's too close to residents' homes. Elsewhere, council bosses in Ashford want planning rules relaxed so they can start to fill vacant units at a leisure complex. The authority's looking for more flexibility on the tenants they could welcome to Elwick Place, which is currently only home to four businesses. Under the proposals, the town could see a live music venue, amusement arcade, and indoor sports centre. A public consultation is running until the end of the month. Now, a documentary will be screened at Medway Culture Club tomorrow as part of their celebrations for Black History Month. The film is called Barrel Children, The Family's Windrush Left Behind. It's an exploration of history, family, and the ongoing impact of migration on identity and community. Filmmaker Nadine White has been speaking to Nicola.
My father's story inspired me to create this documentary in the first place, and it took 7 years to make this documentary. I always describe it as a real labor of love. So I remember my dad talking to my brother and I during our childhood years about how much he enjoyed his childhood growing up in Jamaica, in a countryside parish called Trelawney, being raised by his grandmother. You know, and he mentioned how sad he was when the day came for him to leave her and move from Jamaica to England to be reunited with his parents. So that was the inspiration behind the film, and interviewing people who, you know, had similar experiences to my dad, as far as, you know, moving from the Caribbean to the UK. I realized that in many cases they were traumatized, quite frankly, to leave the Caribbean and delve into a land unknown. So there's one particular interviewee by the name of, he's known as Blacker Dread. He's a reggae producer. His real name is Steve Burnett Martin. And he mentioned to me that when he arrived at the airport in the UK as a child, along with his sister, to be reunited with his mother, he didn't know who this woman was. So, you know, he said to his sister, you know, who is this woman? And he told me that his mother cried. His mother heard him say that and cried. You know, I think it dawned on her in that moment that actually there were many lost years, and, you know, there was a real personal toll on their relationship. So that's one story from the documentary that stays with me.
It's unimaginable, isn't it, that happened. How important do you think it is that you're now telling the story and you're going to be bringing it to the events that are going on with Medway Culture Club during Black History Month?
Yeah, I think it's vital to tell these stories and to highlight these experiences. As I say, it's great that as a nation we're having more conversations about Windrush, but it's important to peel back the layers and have discussions about the impact of migration on family relationships, and, you know, the impact lasts to this day. And I should just also add that the barrel child phenomenon is still going on today. And just to mention where the term barrel child comes from, it was popularized by a Jamaican academic by the name of Dr. Claudette Crawford Brown. And it is named after the barrels and containers like parcels that were packed full of goods such as clothes and, you know, snacks and stationary items and shoes and things like that. The parents would pack these containers and send them back to the Caribbean to those children, just to support the family. So not only did the children get things in the barrel, but also extended family members, including their caregivers. So it's very important to have these conversations and to highlight what is an ongoing experience. And I'm thrilled to be bringing this film to Medway Culture Club as part of the Black History Month celebrations this year.
Tomorrow's screening at Mid-Kent College starts at 4.
Kent Online News.
A hospice that provides end-of-life care for patients in East Kent has been rated outstanding for a second time. Pilgrim's Hospice in Ashford was visited by inspectors in May. They've praised the compassion, dignity and respect from staff. A new school's opened in Medway for children with special educational needs. Rivermead at Stoke on the Hoo Peninsula will provide an extra 100 much-needed places. The site's been converted from an old school building and features a new science lab, food design room, art facilities, classrooms and a library. A popular seaside pub in Whitstable, which suddenly closed earlier this year, is reopened following a makeover by its new bosses. The East Kent in Oxford Street is owned by Shep and Neame and dates back to 1802. It's been taken over by new tenants who've previously run venues in Ibiza. They've brought in a new menu and styling, but say it will remain a traditional British pub. Tom Grennan is going to kick off his 2026 UK tour right here in Kent. He'll be playing at Dreamland in Margate on the 14th of June. Tickets go on sale next Friday. Now, I'm so excited about this next story. A Street Fighter-style game featuring Medway's historical and famous figures is in the making. Medway Fighter is a research project led by Canterbury Christchurch University, which is looking at different ways for people to engage with their local heritage. The prototype will be released at the Electric Medway Festival tomorrow. John Schwarkert is the creative director.
I'm a senior lecturer in character design and concept art, and this project started with the research that I do as a part of my university. So I was very interested in how we could use experimental means or unconventional means to get people to engage with the arts. So what Medway Fighter is it's a project where we're looking at if we can use the co-creation of a video game, get people to make a video game about the place that they're from, to get them a little bit more interested in their cultural heritage and their history.
Amazing. And where are we now in terms of the production process of the game?
So right now we're in the pre-production phase, or just wrapping it up. We're about to release the prototype at the Electric Medway Festival this Saturday. And from there, what we're going to do then is look for further funding to build the final game. So right now this weekend, we're going to get people to play test that prototype, give us some feedback, and then vote on which characters, famous historic people from Medway, they'd like to see in the game.
Amazing. Tell us a bit more about the festival as a whole. I'm aware this isn't the only game debuting. Tell us about that.
Okay, so the Electric Medway Festival happens about once a year. It's a festival dedicated to digital arts. And this year we've also got some co-created games called Forest Keep, based around Rochester Castle. And there's also another game produced with Men in Sheds and many other exhibitions from other artists in the area.
Amazing. Obviously, I don't want to give away any spoilers or anything for the game, but are there any characters from Medway's history that have been highlighted? I'm aware you've got quite a few submissions for the characters. Can you tell us a bit about how many and some of those characters that might appear in the game?
Yeah, that's right. So we've had about 200 participants so far in the project nominating different characters. And we've had about 100 characters nominated. We're launching the prototype with Charles Dickens and Thomas Waghorn. Very likely to enter the game as well will be Will Adams, the first non-Japanese samurai that the HBO show Shogun is centered around. There's also been some wild and wacky submissions. So in addition to playable characters, one thing we're also involving in the game is there's going to be an open world mode where people can wander around the Medway towns and meet not just historical figures, but also local heroes that are nominated by participants. So that could be local football coaches, reverends, people that just make Medway what it is.
Amazing. And I'm aware, I read online the game's release is set for 2027. Is that right?
So we're aiming for a final release at the Electric Medway Festival in 2027. But that is subject to us getting funding, which is going to be the next steps once we have a sweet prototype to show off.
Kent Online News.
Football now, and Gillingham will be two men down as they face Salford City at Priestfield this weekend. Red cards for Johnny Williams and Sam Gale mean they're unavailable for selection, but a red for Romeo Hutton has been overturned. The Gills have picked up just 1 point from their last possible 12 and have dropped to fifth in the table. Assistant manager Richard Dobson spoke to the club's media team.
They're a good side. They had a game against Oldham last weekend. It was a 1-0 win for Salford, but could have been 6-3. They created a lot of chances. They flood bodies forward, got good individual players, good dribblers at the top end of the pitch. So we know it's going to be a tough game, as they all are. But this team have got some really good individuals in key areas. We're going to have to be at our best to deal with them.
It's the last game before we have that sort of mini break, if you like, for the FA Cup first round. So it'd be nice to get a positive result going into that break.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. We always want to win. We want to win every game. Sometimes circumstances conspire against you and it doesn't happen. But we've had a good week again in training. The boys are in good spirits and we just take each game as it comes. We don't get too bogged down in results. You know, we're process driven, and as long as the processes are right, I think you'll get results more often than not.
So a bit of housekeeping. Romelu Hutton's red card was rescinded, so presumably he's available for selection Saturday. And Sam Gale suspended due to 5 yellow cards.
That's correct. Lovely. Yep.
I thought I was right, but I thought I'd check. Who else comes into the group? Anybody come in? Does anybody miss out?
Aaron Rowe might be back with us at the weekend. We'll see what part he can play. But the others are still going to be a little while, I think.
He also gave us this update on the recovery of manager Gareth Ainsworth.
Yeah, we've spoken a lot this week. So, yeah, he's OK. He's obviously, the magnitude of what he's been through is hitting home, and he has good days and bad days. He's desperate to be back in and around us, but it's just sensible that he isn't, and that he fulfills his obligation to recovery and what the doctors have told him. So, yeah, he'll be back when he can, but no one's going to rush him. No one would expect that. We're fine as we are. The place is running like clockwork, as you would expect. The staff have been really, really good. So I think for Gareth's health, the best thing is that he does as he's told and listens to the doctor's advice.
Elsewhere, former Tunbridge Angels boss Craig Nelson has been reappointed as manager of Lewes in East Sussex. He left the club to make the Kent move in the summer, but was sacked last month after 6 defeats in a row. He's now heading back to Lewes to replace Bradley Pritchard. And in cricket, Joe Dedley has signed a 1-year contract extension with Kent. It'll be his 20th year with the club, and he's now also taking on a batting mentorship role. That's all from us today and for the week. Thank you ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can choose the subscription plan that works best for you. For more details, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.